Good day to you, friends. Good day. Welcome. Welcome. Today I would like to talk to you concerning some of the first settlers of our region. One person in particular I wish to discuss is a fellow by the name of Hugh Grant. Hugh Grant eventually owned a grist mill in Pittsburgh. I am sure you know what a grist mill is, however, if not, a grist mill, also known as a corn mill or flour mill, grinds grain into flour. The term grist mill can refer to both the grinding mechanism and the building that holds it. Well, now, to get on with the story, every year Hugh Grant would raft the Ohio and Mississippi rivers to New Orleans, where he would sell surplus goods. That is to say, goods he had an overabundance of and no longer needed. As a matter of fact, he was so adept at selling his goods once he reached his destination of New Orleans, he would even dismantle the raft he used for transportation and sell the lumber from it. Then, with his pockets filled with money, he would head for home following the river routes. He was always aware of the possibility of scoundrels and thieves along the journey back, as some people were too lazy to make an honest living and survived by taking from those that worked hard for what they had. Hugh Grant never took kindly to that type of person and would, more often than not, take a route away from the smoke of a campfire close to a riverbank. "Vultures," he would murmur under his breath as he tried to make his way off the beaten path to avoid danger. "Vultures don't work for the food. They don't make the kill. They just enjoy their pickings." Well, sometime around 1796, while Mr. Grant was returning to Pittsburgh on foot from New Orleans, he decided to take a different route home. He followed the Scioto River into a wilderness area that would later become the state of Ohio, or as the Indians pronounce it, Ohio. The land was rich and full of wild game. Deer, buffalo, and elk were there in abundance. However, one must realize man is not the only predator in the food chain. Large wolf packs, as well as panthers and bears, also roamed the countryside since the area was so full of easy game for them. Hugh Grant was accustomed to dealing with the dangers wild predators presented from time to time as he made the yearly trip down the Ohio and Mississippi rivers and then trudged his way back up north. Mostly, though, he just had to deal with curious raccoons or an occasional wild or hungry stray dog. Seems like nothing brings the meanness out of a critter, including man, like hunger. I've been told while taking this new route home the first time, Hugh Grant was faced by some mighty fierce foes. A marauding pack of hungry wolves were on his trail after he'd picked up his scent, and they were determined to make him the evening supper. The wolves had him surrounded as they closed in for the kill. Closer and closer they came, inch by inch, step by step. The only sound Grant could hear besides the loud beating of his heart pounding in his ears was an occasional low growl from the hungry wolves. He could see their pearly white razor-sharp teeth glistening in the moonlight as the wolves continued to close in on him in the woods. There was a clearing just up ahead, and Grant thought to himself, "Well, I do believe this is going to be the end of me. An evening meal for a bunch of mangy, dirty, stinking wolves." But wait, what was that he saw in the clearing? A lone large tree raising up from the ground with some limbs just low enough to possibly assist in getting away from that hungry pack of wolves. Could he make it? Dare he even try? He knew he could run faster without his long rifle, but even if he managed to outrun the wolves and climb up the tree to safety, well, what then? He had thought earlier about trying to take one shot to take one of those lone wolves out and hopefully scare the rest away with the loud sound of gunfire. But what if that didn't work? Just as the wolves were closing in for the kill, they stopped dead in their tracks and all turned their attention to a large dark figure on a hilltop behind them. As the clouds drifted away from covering the full moon, Grant saw what had the wolf's attention. On that hilltop stood the largest bear Grant had ever seen in his whole life. And mind you, he had seen more than one. Well, let me tell you, he and that wolf pack started running in the direction away from that bear at the same time as the bear was now running down the hill and bellowing and roaring after them. Man and wolf were now running together for their very lives, side by side to begin with. Then the wolf started to pull out ahead of Grant. No way I could outrun those mangy wolves, Grant said to himself as he continued to run faster than he had ever run before. He told himself if he could just make it to that big tree just up ahead in the clearing, he could get away from that bear. As he felt that bear was so large, it wouldn't be able to pull itself up the tree. Just as he made it to the tree, the bear was almost upon him. Grant took one mighty leap and grabbed one tree branch with his free hand and was able to place one foot on a lower branch, and up he went, like a squirrel after a prize nut, he thought to himself. Phew, he exclaimed as he wiped his sweat from his brow. I made it. That was a close one. Well, now, that big old bear was just as determined and maybe even more so than that mangy pack of wolves to make Grant his evening supper. And that bear, so they say, sat right down at the base of that tree to wake Grant out. As most hunters would tell you, it's very hard to shoot downhill, so Grant decided to scoot out on a limb to get a better shot. As he was scooting out on that limb, he lost his grip on his long rifle, and it fell to the ground, making a loud thump as it kicked over to the other side of the trunk of that tree. Too bad it didn't land on that bear's head. As the bear got up and walked over to the long rifle and sniffed it, then the bear returned to the spot of the other side of the tree that was still warm from where he had rested before and sat right back down, resting his back against the tree. Looks like I'm here for the night, too, said Grant, as he tried to make himself comfortable and not fall out of that tree at the same time. There was not much sleep to be had that night, as Grant thought about his predicament and regretted taking a new way home. Abundant wildlife such as deer, buffalo, and elk also meant plenty of predators, too, was the phrase that kept going through his mind. As a new day was breaking and the morning sun started to burn off the morning dew, Grant heard a buzzing sound. It turned out the bear branch he had crawled out on during the night to try to get a better shot at that old bear had a beehive on it. That's it, he said out loud. If I can dislodge that beehive and make it land on that bear's head, maybe that will keep him occupied and give me a chance to escape. Grant's stomach was growling with hunger as he thought about that delicious golden honey and that honeycomb those bees had made. That gave him hope, though, because he knew that old bear was hungry, too. So as soon as Grant set about dislodging that honeycomb from the tree limb with the branch that he'd broken off, he pulled that stick back, and pure, sweet, golden honey was dripping from the end of that stick. Grant's stomach let out another big growl, and he couldn't stand it any longer. He had to have a taste of that pure, sweet, golden honey. Yum, yum, yum. That's good stuff there. Hugh Grant had always had a sweet tooth ever since he could remember. He loved sweets so much that, in fact, his love of sweets had caused his wife to have to let out the waste on his trousers. His wife would often exclaim, "The love of sweets is going to be the death of you, Hugh Grant. You mark my words." As he sat there calmly eating the honey off of the end of that stick he had fashioned, he almost forgot about the old bear at the base of the tree. Well, when Grant pulled the stick out of the bee's honeycomb, it caused the honey to start dripping down towards the ground, and the smell of that fresh honey had awakened the bear. The bear was now laying on his back and letting the fresh honey drip onto his mouth. He occasionally licked some of the honey off of his nose, and that was one of the funniest things Grant had ever seen, that big old vicious bear all laid back with its eyes closed and the honey continued to drip into its mouth and around it. Both of them could have stayed right there and continued to partake of that delicious, fresh, sweet, golden honey. But Grant decided now would be a great time to make his escape. He ever so quietly shimmed down the opposite side of the tree from where the bear was laying. When he hit the ground, he picked up his long rifle that he had accidentally dropped during the night and took off as quick and quietly as he could. He didn't know if the bear heard him or not. All he knew was that bear was being satisfied at the time by that fresh, sweet, golden, dripping honey. Grant survived that day and lived to tell the tale. Even with his encounter with the wolves and the bear, Grant liked what he had seen concerning the land, and he began to liquidate his Pittsburgh property. Around 1802 or 1803, Grant, his wife Catherine, and five children left Pennsylvania by oxcart, following Zane's trace to Chillicothe. It was a rough trip. Many tree stumps made travel difficult. The trace was mostly for horseback riders. It is said sometime later, while exploring some recently purchased property, Grant spotted another beehive with a honeycomb in a tree, and it was the biggest honeycomb he had ever laid eyes on. "No bears around this time," he thought. "I'm not going to waste my time trying to dislodge just a honeycomb. I'm going to bring down that whole limb to harvest this honey." He took out his trusty hatchet and began to chop away at the limb, holding a honeycomb full of fresh, sweet, golden, delicious honey. As he proceeded to chop away at the rather large limb, he heard a loud crack. The next thing that happened, some have called the bee's revenge. Others have called it death catching up with Grant. Most just called it a freak accident. The large tree limb holding the bee's honeycomb had broken away and hit Grant square in his chest, killing him instantly. Down came Grant and the sweet treasure he was after. Some of the honeycomb broke away and wound up on Grant's clothing. When Grant didn't return home, his wife became concerned and asked some of the local men to go in search of him. They found him dead, laying on the ground underneath that tree with honey smeared on his clothing. Upon the return of his dead body to his wife, Grant's wife was reported to have said, "I told him his sweet tooth was going to be the death of him." Of interest is, while in Chillicothe, Grant purchased 450 virgin acres in central Ohio. He had sold 187 acres in what is now downtown Pittsburgh. Once he arrived in what is now Jackson Township, he couldn't even identify his own property. So he built a log cabin and became a squatter on the west bank of the Scioto River. Native American tribes also had villages along the Scioto. The tribes included the Wyandot and the Shawnee. The Shawnee had permanent villages in Ohio, but they considered Kentucky and Virginia as their hunting grounds.
Catherine eventually identified the land her husband had purchased and moved the family to a newly built log cabin. A son, Hugh Grant Jr., was born 6 months after his father was killed. He grew up becoming a leading and influential farmer in central Ohio. We don't know where Grant is buried, but from some historic documentation, it seems to indicate his body rests near the old cabin where Grant's Run empties into the Scioto River. It's also reported that when the moon is full, you can often see the dark outline of a large bear on a hilltop near Grant's cabin. And if you stand quietly, you may even hear the sound of a lone wolf howling in the cool night air, and the low grunt of a big old bear.